The second season of El Flow is here. Step into the ever-evolving world of reggaeton and get up close with both legendary figures and emerging talents in the industry.
Part of the enormous significance of reggaeton is really the way in which personal narratives connect to larger things going on historically and socially.
Listen to El Flow on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to The Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for The Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, hour 2 on a Tuesday, Super Bowl week. Live in L.A., it's The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. This week is crazy for me. Today is packed. Wednesday's packed. Thursday's packed. Friday's jammed up. Joy Taylor's joining me. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year. There's a lot of fun people in town. You and I used to do Radio Row stuff. We're no longer on that. But this is a fun week for us. You see a lot of old friends.
It's a very big week in the biz. It's interesting because LA is very spread out.
Yes.
As far as events goes, you have events for all the way from Santa Monica to Inglewood to downtown. Obviously, Hollywood and Beverly Hills are going to be a buzz this week.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because for the Super Bowl, you normally have two fan bases coming in town as well.
Right.
And now you only have one.
Yeah.
Because the Rams are already here.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it'll be as crazy as it was originally anticipated because we don't have the second fan base coming in town. But
yeah,
it's going to be a good week.
Yeah, I remember going to New York Super Bowl week. The Seahawks were in it, so I had friends from my hometown. My best friend in high school's family came out to New York, the Seahawks.
That was the first time I met you.
That's right.
That was 8 years ago.
And that was the Peyton Manning Super Bowl, so they won. So they were deliriously happy. Then they were back, and then they lost, and they weren't as happy. But the New York Super Bowl was interesting because New York is such a big international city that we were in New York. Usually Super Bowls take over cities.
Yeah.
And in Los Angeles and New York, they're so big that, like, it was funny. We were in New York for the Super Bowl week, and you didn't even know. I mean, there's just so many things going on in New York and Los Angeles. I mean, when I go to Jacksonville for a Super Bowl or Detroit.
Well, even Houston was taken over by the Super Bowl. We were, like, in the middle because the stadium is right there. And even Miami, too, really felt like,
at least
in South Beach, like it was taken over by the Super Bowl.
Yeah, so we can't wait, and we're happy to have everybody. By the way, I want to touch on this before I get to Lincoln Riley. Ryan Clark, a very good player, now he's a broadcaster, was talking about Russell Wilson, you know, near and dear to my Pacific Northwest heart. He said, Russell Wilson is not an all-time great quarterback. He's never going to be in those conversations. We have to stop putting him in that world. That any team that has Russell can win a Super Bowl. Now, that's kind of harsh. You know what I like about Russell Wilson? High school, college, and pros. He wins. He wins games. 9 of 10 years in the NFC West, he's had a winning record. 6 of the last 10 Super Bowls. 6 of 10, 60% of Super Bowls have had an NFC West team in it. So, dude wins a lot of games in the toughest division in football. That's why I like him. I don't care about the stats. I don't care about the lists. I do think the two best young offensive coaches in the National Football League are Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, and he's got an older defensive coach. And I think Seattle has put an enormous burden on him. I don't feel like Stafford has to play great for the Rams to win. I don't think Garoppolo had to play great for the Niners to win. Russell Wilson has to be great for the Seahawks to win. They don't run it consistently. The defense has gotten worse for the last 4 years. They've whiffed on multiple first-round picks. They gave up too much for Jamal Adams, and they have a defensive coach in an offensive world. Russell Wilson, to me, wins games, is really good. But what's happened is the franchise has put too much on his shoulders. And by the way, this is why Brady ultimately left New England. They could not find weapons as he aged, and Tom was tired of carrying the offense. I say this, Kobe Bryant used to say it all the time. I want to be the man. I don't want to be the only man. And the reality, Russell's problem is he has to be great for them to win in the toughest division. You can't ask him to do that. So whether you think he's an all-time great quarterback, if you put him in the NFC East, he's winning 14 games a year. I like Dak. Put him in the NFC West. Suddenly you'd all doubt Dak. The environment you play in has a disproportionate effect on how you're viewed. This dude is asked to carry a franchise that can't draft well, is increasingly bad at defense, has an older defensive coach against the two smartest offensive guys in pro football, McVay and Kyle Shanahan. They're asking too much of him. The dude needs help. He needs a life preserver or six in Seattle. And with that, what a crazy world college football is. This transfer portal, I was saying this the other day, an NFL coach now has more control over his personnel than a college coach does. Lincoln Riley, new USC football coach, joining us live. You know, Lincoln, it's funny when you look at this transfer portal, and you've greatly benefited from it. You brought in 12, 13 guys. Most will be starters. Many will. You've been a guy that's never had a problem pivoting off stuff. And a couple years ago, I don't think you liked the transfer portal, and now you've got to use it. And there's people calling you out saying, Lincoln, you said this 2 years ago, and what are you doing now? My takeaway is you can't be stubborn. Like, if the world's changed, is it been weird to you to be at the head of a program that desperately needed the transfer portal?
It has. But like you said, you can't. The rules are the rules. I think there's kind of two parts of you. There's the purist. There's the person that obviously loves football. In some ways, maybe the fan of the game of you that maybe has an idea of the way you'd like to see it go. But then also there's the person that's here to do a job. And there's a person that has a set of rules and parameters to work within. And you're going to do everything you can within those rules to help build your program and put it to an advantage. And so that's what we've tried to do.
So a handful of Oklahoma players, Caleb Williams, the most notable, Mario Williams, great receiver, Latrell McCutcheon, excellent young corner. You brought a couple of Oklahoma kids over, really, really good players, but you also went to Stanford and you went to Oregon and you went to Washington and you went to Colorado. Was it a delicate situation where your heart was in Oklahoma for so long, you leave and you want to bring some players over, but you know it's sensitive? Was that a tough situation?
I think so, but I think the transfer portal kind of handles a lot of that. You know, we didn't take players from Oklahoma. We took players from the transfer portal. You know, those players and their families had to make a decision to either stay at that university, just like any other player has to make, or to enter the portal where then they can be recruited by anybody in the country. And that's up to those players and their families, and we have nothing to do with that. But once a player gets into a portal where they are open to any school in the country, we would be crazy not to take a look at that and try to help our football team. And then on top of it, for me, maybe the more emotional tie for me is these are guys that we recruited. We got to know their families. We were a part of the entire process. You know, all of a sudden they were good enough for us to take at Oklahoma, but now we wouldn't give them a chance just because we're at a new spot. I just, that part never really made sense to me. So, you know, certainly – Excited to get those guys here along with all of our other players. And to us, it's literally these are players in a portal. These are guys that we feel like can come into USC and help us get this program to where it needs to be.
I went to dinner last night with a friend of mine, Sage Rosenfels, who played in the NFL. He loves Caleb Williams. And I asked him, I said, tell me about him. And he said, you know, he's smart guy, gets it, gets better, coachable. And it's interesting. The game, Lincoln, is it's really interesting how football's working now. You had Kyler Murray. You want players to be coachable and play within a system, but then you get a Kyler or a Caleb Williams who are so gifted, you want the artistry to come out. When you get a Kyler or a Caleb, is it different to coach a player that there is a certain box to your offense, but you don't want to overcoach? He's such a unique talent.
Agreed. I think the plan for us, or maybe the best case scenario for us, is let's teach them how it should be scripted. You know, let's teach them how this should play out, this call versus this coverage, or this run versus this blitz, whatever it is. But then let's also not lock them down so much mentally that they can't use their natural gifts. And that's what you recruit so hard for. That's what you develop so hard for. Is, as we know in football, you just mentioned it, not every play is going to go exactly like both sides or both coordinators, both sets of coaches envision it going. And a lot of times when you have players that can play within a system but have a great feel of when they can make a play, make something happen unscripted, unprompted, it gives you a much better chance for success.
You know, I tell, you know, USC fans are crazy. So, I mean, my USC buddies, they're all like, well, when are they going to win national championships? I'm like, whoa, slow down. I said, just can we get a year to get the business, the culture of USC football back? And then year two, you know, you have a really good recruiting class. And then year three, all right, that's the year you got a couple recruiting classes. But then, you know, part of me thinks, well, there's the transfer portal. It's easier than it used to be. What is a realistic view, Lincoln, on I can go toe-to-toe with Ohio State? I think we can play personnel-wise. I feel like it's middle of year three. Is that too quick? Is it unrealistic? Is it too slow? Like, how do you view USC playing in that top seven or eight teams, the Georgia, Notre Dame, who's on your schedule, you know, that group?
Well, I'd say this. The good part about being in my position is we honestly don't spend much time thinking about how long we think it's going to take. I think we obviously know what it looks like. We've been there. We've been a part of those championships and the big games and all of that. And so I think it's you have a vision in your head of, all right, here's what we need to get to. Here's the steps we need to take. Now let's go. You know, let's put the gas down. Let's go attack this as quickly as we can. Let's use the portal. Let's use high school recruiting. Let's develop. Let's build up facilities. Let's build up culture, atmosphere around the program, staff. I mean, and I think you just do that as fast as you can. And obviously, the faster you can do it, the more it takes hold and the chance you have to start stacking, you know, great years on top of great years. And so I don't want to limit it by saying, well, it can't happen until year three or year four. I don't know that I necessarily believe that. I think with all the advantages that we have, and if we continue to invest as a program and continue to build in all areas, obviously we would not have left what we left unless we felt like this could be something very, very elite. And I think every person that we've brought in, every staff member, every player feels that right now.
You know, you've been around Southern California now for, I follow you, I see you're traveling around, you're going to the high schools. California's got 39 million people. There's, you know, 200 Division I kids annually, or 150, whatever it is. And there's five or six states, Georgia, Florida, Texas, California. They got more players. What is your sense? I always feel like California is a great place for quarterbacks, wide receivers, corners. I mean, what is your sense of the high school talent in the state? Is what do you see in the first 2 months?
I've been very impressed. I really have. As you said, my previous stops, we've recruited California on kind of more of a spot basis for a specific player here or there. So it's been fun to really get to know the whole state, to get around the coaches, to see all the talent that there really is here. I think there's as much talent in this state as there's ever been. Certainly, we'll get outside of the state here and there to spot guys, but our priority is going to be doing the very best we can to bring in the very best to USC from the state of California. And so very excited about the talent, and that was certainly, you know, that's certainly part of what makes this USC opportunity so unique.
Finally, the NIL is interesting. Nick Saban said something the other day. He said, listen, if we compensate great players in the program, that's what it was created for. I don't think it should be used to buy high school players. And that's, to me, I don't – there's got to be some legislation on this. Like, it's not meant to pay 17-year-olds. It's meant to pay Caleb Williams or, a great player, right? Are you uncomfortable a little bit with the NIL? Is it easy to navigate, easier than you thought, tougher? Is it a landmines of problems here? How do you view it?
No, it's unique. I mean, listen, it is. But, I mean, anybody that knows anything about college football knew that the second they put in all this NIL legislation, the first thing that it's going to get to is recruiting. It was destined to happen, and that's the recruiting gets so competitive at this level, as we all know, and it's obviously it's a part of it right now. Again, whether people choose to admit it or not, it certainly is. So excited about the opportunities for all of our players here. Los Angeles, this community, this university provides some unique opportunities that I don't think exist anywhere else in our sport. And so I think it can certainly be an advantage for us. But it'll be interesting to see as we go on. And, there's two parts of it. One, do you think there should be legislation in terms of recruiting? And then can that happen with all the different laws and all the different movements going on right now? So it's certainly going to evolve, but it's a big part of any part of college football right now, whether it's recruiting, whether it's current players on the roster. It's certainly changed a lot of how people operate.
By the way, you do realize when you put one of those emojis up, fight on your Twitter, you do realize it freaks everybody. It's like it's a Christmas present that we can't open. So every time you put up that emoji, all USC fans are like, oh, it's like being a 9-year-old and mom wrapped a present and you have to sit and wait for 10 days until you can open the present. So use those with discretion. They're very powerful, Lincoln. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, there's a lot more coming.
Look at that. The tree's got a lot of presents. Lincoln, it's a pleasure to see you. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Fight on.
You bet. Fight on, baby. I told you before, I don't hide it. I want Miami to win a bunch of games. I want USC to win a bunch of games. I like Texas, not just because I know Mario, Sark, and Lincoln. I've had Lincoln on for years when he was the Oklahoma coach. By the way, I had him on twice a year, even though I was very critical sometimes of you-know-who. Brought him on. He was always there. But there are brands, and if you love college football like I do, there are brands that matter to the sport. Notre Dame matters. Nothing against Alabama. But Notre Dame, Texas, Miami, USC are glamour brands. They really matter to get some coastal people, a lot of Notre Damers on the coast, a lot of Michigan grads. They're not staying in Detroit and Michigan. They're leaving the Big Ten footprint to go to the coasts. So it matters that Michigan's good and Notre Dame. Not all programs are even in terms of, and I said this yesterday, y'all tell me you don't like glamour with your football, then why are the Dallas Cowboys the most popular franchise? Why is the most popular team in the 80s the Cowboys and the Niners, Joe Montana and Aikman? Like, college football, and Joy and I have said this, lost its glamour. Why is the NBA the only sport that gets glamour? The NFL's like, we want some of that.
Well, you also have to have the coast involved. A lot of people live on the coast.
In the big cities?
In the big cities. And if you only have Southern teams being competitive, and those are the only teams that we're seeing at the end of the season in the college football playoff, that's going to limit the amount of eyeballs that are watching it, because it was just like, and they're the only teams that are there. So like, I've already seen this. If I've never seen Alabama, Georgia, if I've never seen Alabama, Clemson, then okay. But like, didn't we see this last year? Like, I need some other teams.
When USC played Texas, I would say there's only about 4 to 5 glamour brands in college football. Miami's a glamour brand. Texas is a glamour brand. It's not about winning. Oklahoma's great. Texas is a more glamorous brand.
USC is.
USC is a glamour brand. I always felt Michigan was. Penn State's great. I always felt Michigan, Tom Brady, legendary coach.
We also have a lot of New Yorkers like that are Michigan grads.
Well, no, I mean, at one point, my agent, my attorney, Michigan's got the law school, the medical school. It's a glamour brand. Alabama's a great football program. It's not a glamour brand. It's just a great program. Same with Georgia, LSU. But there's not many. There's like 3 or 4. Ohio State's a better program than Michigan. But Michigan, there's a certain allure to the M, the med school, the Harbaugh, the Brady. There is something about the fight song is unique. The branding, the helmets, the big house. And fans,
Notre Dame kind of. Notre Dame's unique.
Oh, no. Notre Dame's got a million of the most famous media people are from Notre Dame. The Regis Philbin effect. Notre Dame's a glamour brand. Fans get really worked up. Alabama's just a great program. But it's a great college football program. USC's more glamorous. Miami's more, it's big city, it's palm trees, it's the beach, it's LA, it's Miami. In fact, there's an argument to be made. Those are the two brands that are the most glamorous. They're big city brands. College football is mostly small towns, rural America, you know, like Athens, Georgia, Ann Arbor, cool towns, but kind of small.
But it's not that we're rooting against these smaller schools.
No, we just want the big ones in.
Areas. If you want the sport to continue to grow and have a grasp on the nation, it has to actually be around the nation. You have to have some parity with locations. It can't just all be southern teams.
Think about the NFL. You've got Seattle, San Francisco, and the Rams, West Coast. The Patriots are always good. It's an issue now. The New York teams stink. But the Dolphins are a bit. Miami Dolphins are a bit of a glamour brand. The Saints have a little bit of glamour to them with Sean Payton and Breeze for years. And then you have the Midwest, the Colts, the Packers. And then you have the Plain States. You've got Dallas. Then you have the Desert Southwest, Arizona. You want some symmetry,
yes.
Geographic symmetry.
That's college a good football, way to put it. You need geographic symmetry and parity for competition. That's why it's great that Cincinnati is in the Super Bowl along with the glamour of the LA Rams.
Yeah.
So you have balance. Everybody feels like they have a chance.
College football's gotten way too regional. So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to do everything I can to get great recruits to Miami and USC. If they have to get free hats from Fox, I'll do anything I can.
That's going to be the slang thing.
I am going to give free swag to USC. Oh, it's got to be legal. And Miami players, because I love the sport. It's too regional. I'm over it. I want it to be bigger and more coastal along with the South.
Yes.
Not eliminating them. They always win. That's fine. I want it to be bigger and broader because I can talk about it more on the air.
Yeah.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Cam Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip? But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like.
Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we got to give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are going to be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time.
I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe. From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question is going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun.
And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Terry Bradshaw still has plenty of money to give away, so Fox Bet Super 6 is running Stack the Cash one more time. The last two jackpots surpassed $325,000, and they want you to make this one even bigger. So scan the QR code, download the Super 6 app, and enter your picks in the Super Bowl contest for your chance to win, and invite your friends too, because the more people who enter, the bigger the jackpot gets.
Burrow and Matt Stafford. It's incredible. I still will say, you know what's interesting about Burrow? So Burrow said yesterday, Joey showed the bite, where Burrow talked about, you know, don't tell me how much you work out on Instagram. Like, just go work out. Work out in silence. And I've always believed you become what your personality is as a quarterback. I'm giving Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is known, I've had friends that have said this, he'll ghost you. Like, if you don't say something to the media, he'll ghost you. Well, he does that a little bit as a football player. That if you drop a pass, if you're not trustable, like, he'll ghost you. He won't throw your way. He's a little bit like that as a quarterback. You become your personality. What I like about Burrow, by the way, we've said this about Baker. Baker's got a lot of chutzpah. A little too much confidence, it got him hurt when he tried to square up a safety. He thinks, I'm not trying to be mean, but sometimes Baker needs more self-awareness. He plays like he lives, a little more confidence than maybe he should. But what I like about Burrow, the thing that Burrow has, Brady had and Andrew Luck had, Burrow has authentic confidence. He doesn't care what you think of him. He's never on social media. Andrew Luck wasn't. Brady for years wasn't. And it shows up in his play. Brady's had pick sixes in Super Bowls and been brilliant the next drive. Andrew Luck could be a turnover machine. It never bothered him. Joe Burrow had multiple games this year. He was awful. It has no effect on him. That's confidence. The confidence, don't tell me you're confident and then I can watch your game. Like Kevin Durant will tell you, it's not my problem. It's your problem. Kevin, you had a burner account on Twitter. You do care what people think. Aaron Rodgers constantly tells you and projects, I don't care about the media. Then why do you talk about it all the time? Burrow and Andrew Luck and Brady have a very unique personality, and it becomes their style of play. They truly don't care what you think. And I can tell that because when they make huge mistakes, They don't shrink. They go right back. I mean, Burrow had some quarters. I saw a couple games this year. That Bears game, you're like, I think he threw picks on three straight throws. He was brutal. Fourth time he got the ball, did not care. Tennessee game, a pick, sacked, did not care. You watch Burrow's confidence. It's authentic confidence. It's inner scoreboard, not outer scoreboard. He's not trying to tell you how tough he is. He's not worried about what you think. And I can tell from his style of play. I can absolutely tell from his Twitter, from his IG, and from his style of play. He really doesn't care what you think. That's confidence. A lot of guys talk it and say it, and then they go to social media and they're firing back. If somebody has to constantly tell you they don't care about something, they care about something. Burrow just doesn't care. Andrew Luck retired, and he didn't need football. He just disappeared. It's like, bye-bye. Bye-bye, I'm just going to read books and hang out with my family. That's who he was as a player. He didn't need your vote of confidence to tell you he was confident. I always tell the story about Andrew Luck. I always knew he was good in college. I talked about it early. I went to a USC game. I think Matt Barkley was quarterbacking for the Trojans. Andrew Luck for Stanford. It was an incredible game. I think it went to overtime. Andrew Luck, late in the fourth quarter, threw a terrible pick six. It was awful. And he did what Andrew, he put his hands in his helmet like, oh, I'm such a dummy. He walked over, and David shot a smile on his face. And he was like, it's okay, buddy. Andrew Luck came back and had a perfect drive on the road at the Coliseum, 85,000 people to win the game. And it's like, a lot of guys shrink. Like, a lot of guys shrink. Short memory Andrew Luck, short memory Burrow, short memory Brady. That's confidence. You just don't care what others think. Truly don't care. And I think Burrow has that. And it's an unbelievable quality to have when you're a public figure. Here was Burrow on our show. So I remember when I criticized him? And I not that I criticized him, but you know, I was kind of tough on Baker, and I was a little bit tough on Burrow. And I remember when we brought him on the show, and I you know, said, I'll let you see the tape. Let's just get this part out of the way, and then we'll talk about real stuff. So when I don't even think I was critical of you. I said you're going to be Tony Romo. But when all this stuff's going on and I'm a loudmouth, did your parents or a friend or anybody go, oh, coward. Oh, God, you're sucked. I mean, did you hear any of it?
Yeah, there was definitely some of that. But, you know, if I took into account every person's opinion from the last 5 years, there's no chance that I would be where I'm at right now. So I just kept my nose down and worked.
Yeah. Didn't really care. By the way, my daughter met his parents, and they're like, oh, Dad, no wonder he's great. Like, he just is. There's just something about you become your personality. You really do. If you're prickly, you become a prickly quarterback. If you're insecure, you become an insecure quarterback. If you're a projector, you start projecting. If you're a ghoster, you ghost. If you're really confident, you don't care what we think, and you don't react to it. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy did not land a head coaching job in the 2022 cycle, but he could be coaching for another team in 2022 because, according to Tom Pelissero, his contract with Kansas City is expiring. So that means he could re-sign with the Chiefs as their offensive coordinator or choose to depart the franchise for a different opportunity. He's been with the Chiefs since 2013 when Reid took over, and he started out as a running backs coach. He was promoted to offensive coordinator when Matt Nagy departed to become the head coach of the Bears in 2018. He's been a topic of conversation, obviously, around the coaching hires for a couple years now, deservedly so. I am surprised that he didn't get a coaching job this time around.
Where did he interview?
I don't know where he interviewed.
I don't think he got a lot of interviews.
He interviewed a couple places last year.
Yeah, no, last year he did Houston. And by the way, we said at the time, don't take the job.
Yeah, I think part of it could be that he
is picky.
And he should be, because obviously, black coaches don't get a lot of opportunities, as we know. And if you go somewhere and you fail, or whatever you want to define what happened with Brian Flores and the Dolphins, which I don't, you know, classify as a failure, but you get fired, you're not going to get many other opportunities after that.
Well, you know, it's Joy, I thought about this a couple days ago. Like, I think Brian Daboll's a really good coach. But I thought about this. Did Brian Daboll of the Bills, now the New York Giants, take a job a year early. Like, he wanted the Chargers job and didn't get it. So the natural assumption is, well, he'll interview again. I don't think you can fix the Giants. Not if the Mara family is saying you have to make Daniel Jones work. So my question is, in a league like Eric Bieniemy should be picky. Houston's a bad job.
He interviewed with the Broncos and the Saints this offseason.
Okay, so those are legit. But again,
I would have think that the Saints would be a good job in that they are a stable organization.
Yes.
They do have some weapons. They have a defense in place, but they don't have a quarterback. And again, if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win in this league. The Broncos obviously want to try and make a play for Aaron Rodgers, which is why the Hackett hire makes sense. If they don't get, not that, you know, he's going to fail there, but again, if you don't have a quarterback, that job is not a good job. Like, and there's only 32 of these jobs. So when you evaluate what's a good job and a bad job, there's only 32 of them. So if you want to be a head coach, any of these jobs is a good job because there are a limited amount of these in existence on planet Earth. There's only 32 people that are going to get those jobs. But if you want to do this for a long time, you have to be strategic with it because we know these owners are extremely impulsive. Fans are very impatient, and because the league has skewed so much in the favor of the best quarterback, if you don't have a guy,
you're done.
You're done.
So, like, to me, I think young coaches have more power than they think. Like, I look at the Brian Daboll situation, and I have nothing against the hire. I think he's really good. But you cannot win in this league if Daniel Jones – I'm not saying you can't win games.
You're never going to win that division.
Okay, so, yeah, so...
Hello, like, Philadelphia is way better than we thought they were.
So
you have Dallas, who is complete, Philadelphia.
There were two jobs in this cycle. I would say, if you're telling me there were... How many of these jobs are great?
I don't think any of them are great.
No.
But that's why they're available.
So Denver's roster is, they don't have an owner, and they don't have a quarterback. Not great. Raiders, I got the quarterback, division's brutal... Roster needs a lot of tweaking. And oh, by the way, probably the poorest owner in the league.
And he's had seven head coaches since 2011.
It's a fire sale. So my takeaway on all these jobs is the immediate reaction of the media is always this. How come he didn't get interviewed? My reaction is, if I'm Eric Bieniemy and I have Patrick Mahomes, there's going to be eight jobs open next year. I don't think there were any great jobs. I think Josh McDaniel did look at Derek Carr and say to himself, you only get about one job a year that has a legitimate quarterback. Like, about one, I'm going to move west, do it. And I do think he felt there was a bit of a ceiling with Mac Jones. But if I was Eric Bieniemy's agent, I would tell him, next year's openings will be more interesting.
I mean, I think it's good to interview. It's always good to have your name
absolutely
out there. But, yeah, I mean, I look at all of these situations, and they're all open for different reasons. Obviously, the Saints, you know, Sean Payton retired, but he also retired because they don't have a quarterback. So there's two teams, the Raiders and
Minnesota,
Jacksonville. I mean, if you believe you can make Kirk Cousins better than he is, I don't. I don't believe that. I mean, right. I think they're going to be competitive, but I don't think Kirk Cousins is any better than Kirk Cousins is. We know what he is at this point. Now, Chicago is a good job. You have Justin Fields, but they went defense.
And
so it really is only as good as your offensive coordinator hire.
And they're in a defensive rebuild. They're too expensive in the front seven. I guess my point is, our initial reaction is always, why didn't blank interview for the job? And I got to be honest with you. This was not a great year for job openings. The Raiders is the best. Denver's is the best in terms of talent. You have no quarterback and a new owner coming. That's not great. Raiders was the best with quarterback, but you have fundamental issues and instability over the last 25 years in that organization. There weren't a lot of great jobs.
There were better candidates than there were jobs this hiring cycle.
Exactly. Way better candidates than jobs.
So Odell joined the Rams on November 11th, and with the injury of Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp said it forced Odell to jump in and learn things at an expedited pace.
He had to do a lot of this stuff mentally just on his own, learning, you know, our play calls, our formations, all this different stuff, all the nuance and detail that it takes to be good in this offense. And he's just done an unbelievable job of that. For him to do what he's doing, for him to be producing the way he has been, speaks volumes to the player that he is, the teammate that he is, the football intelligence that he has to be able to learn this stuff and be able to go out and execute it.
I never thought that the scout that Odell is a bad teammate
was fair or made any sense.
No, like, I never thought he would.
I think Odell's matured a lot. Yeah. Like, I think that you should be allowed to do that, right, in life. Like, grow up a little bit. That happens. I don't think he's the same person he was in New York that he is now. Cleveland probably changed his perspective on a lot of things. And it wasn't the best exit from New York. We know that. And it wasn't really the best exit from Cleveland. But I don't think any of those situations were necessarily Odell's fault. Maybe, you know, it played a bigger role in New York. But Cleveland, to me, was never a good fit. The way he was playing there, the type of offense that they run, it just never made any sense. Like, what happened in Cleveland was not Odell's fault. And what happened between him and Baker, while obviously Odell probably signed off on his dad doing that, if the front office wasn't going to make a move, you got to force your hand somehow. Sometimes you just have to play the ugly card and just let the chips fall where they may. Like, he is excelling now. We can see that it wasn't him in Cleveland.
Yeah, the most fascinating part, because I reached out to executives in the league and I said, what do you make? And most said, you know, he gets hurt a lot. He's not separating. Well, he's open a lot for the Rams. So there's a lot of different ways to be open in the NFL. You can be schemed open. You can get open. I mean, he's not Ja'Marr Chase fast, but when I watch him, the thing that's really jumped out to me is his hands have come back. I always thought with the Giants, he had great hands. It's weird in Cleveland. Like, golfers get yips. He got a case of the drops. He didn't catch the ball confidently. Like, in LA now, he's doing that whole, you know, like.
It was also clear he had no connection with Baker.
Yeah, he didn't.
Like, you do have to have some kind of chemistry with your quarterback. It's obvious that Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp have spent a lot of time together, working together, studying film together, because their connection is great. Like, Cooper Kupp is amazing and Matthew Stafford is obviously very good, but you have to get on the same page.
Ask,
like, it's very
this.
Much a reliant position.
Ask yourself this. Matt Stafford leaves the Lions, excels. OBJ leaves the Browns, excels. Is it possible that the Rams have a better culture than Detroit and Cleveland, and really good star players are more comfortable, are more supported? Is it possible Stafford and OBJ instantly click? I'm going to give the Rams having a better culture credit for it.
Absolutely. And communication is very important as well. Like, you can have better players around you, but knowing what your role is, what's being asked of you, and everything being very clear and open, yeah, which is cultural, helps.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Russell Westbrook's fit with the Lakers has been questioned all season. So much so that there's been rumors that the team might be trying to deal him before the trade deadline on Thursday, which is fast approaching. And an unnamed league executive recently spoke about the Lakers and their attempt to trade Westbrook. The exec said it's obvious that they're trying to move Westbrook, which is damn near impossible. They know that roster's just not working. Another exec said Russell plays hard and he's always put up big numbers, but is he a winning player?
Well, no, we've known that. That's not even an argument. You and I know that.
Again, I think what the Lakers have mostly is a perspective problem.
They
this shouldn't have never been on. It should have never been on Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook should have been brought in when he was brought in with a very clear, just what we were talking about with the Rams, very clear communication. You are a role player. You are not the star. LeBron is the star. Anthony Davis is the star. You play a role on this team. If you don't want to play a role, it's probably not a good idea for you to be here.
Yeah.
You are going to be able to step up some nights when Anthony Davis is out, when LeBron is out, of course. But the failure of the Lakers, if it has been a failure, which I don't really think it is, I think they've had injury issues all season, which is to be expected with the oldest roster in the league.
Yeah.
The failure is it should never be on Russell Westbrook. It's Anthony Davis. We know what LeBron is going to be. We know what he's going to bring to the table. The question is Anthony going to play to the level he needs to play at? And Russell Westbrook should have known from the beginning what his role was with the team.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Mark Sanchez last hour. More in a minute.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Hushmanzada and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
Lily Herman, my co-host in season one, helped me choose a team, a driver, and then...
Well, we sent you on your jolly way.
Yeah.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
I'm Michael Costa, comedian, Daily Show correspondent.
And we're back with season two because, as it turns out, F1's newest fan is still a little...
dazed and confused.
Join us for season two of Choosing Sides F1 as we dive deeper into the rabbit hole of the pinnacle of motorsports.
Who makes money here?
What's CFD?
How do you manage a tire?
You, get back in there.
What are the rumors? What's the gossip?
But you also know that someone's listening to your radio.
I'm going to pull up a picture of a tea cozy. I want to see what this thing looks like. Are you going to be doing that accent this whole pod?
Listen to season two of Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts. You find it.
Attention all wrestling aficionados. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. This is Freddie Prinze Jr., and I am beyond thrilled to announce that our wrestling extravaganza is back, and joining me once again is the one and only Jeff Dye.
Get ready as we highlight the most jaw-dropping matches, dissect the fiercest feuds, and uncover the latest twists and turns in the world of pro wrestling.
We're dusting off our legendary side quests and unleashing a barrage of brand new segments that will keep you guys on the edge of your seat, like our talks on Unsanctioned Thursdays.
Freddie, you know we gotta give the people what they want. This season, we have an all-star lineup of special guests who are gonna be gracing our podcast, bringing with them their own unique insights, experiences, and all of that in the world of pro wrestling and beyond.
Whether you're a seasoned wrestling veteran or a fresh-faced newcomer, we promise an experience like no other. So buckle up, wrestling fans. Listen to Wrestling with Freddie as part of the My Cultura podcast network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time. I'm talking Hall of Famers, MVPs, gold medalists.
I absolutely hate the Colts, bro. This game, I swear, led to the Deflategate.
Hey, guys, this ball's a little flat.
Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl?
Julian walking around, I'm pretty sure he had his shirt off for reasons I'm not sure. He was saying, gotta believe.
Oh, you gotta believe.
From 18-1 with Eli.
Are you calling Bill just a cheater? Is that what you're saying right now?
He's looking for an advantage.
The 2004 ALCS with Big Pop.
The Red Sox in 2004 bounced back after the 3-0 in a winner chicken dinner, homie.
The immaculate reception with Terry Bradshaw.
Fired the ball. I hear the roar of the crowd. I never thought he caught the ball, but he did.
We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question is going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question. Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun. And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So there's a lot of stories today. Portland is basically the Portland Trail Blazers, well-run franchise for most of my adult life. You know, they've won back in the 70s, and they've had some great players. They've had some really bad breaks with Brandon Roy and Greg Oden, and seemingly great players with great careers fall apart physically. But basically what they're doing is they're spreading the message, listen, we're going to rebuild around Dame. And my takeaway is, well, Portland's not a free agent destination. You've given away some, you know, trade capital in Norman Powell and Robert Covington and C.J. McCollum. You know what Portland should have done? Moved off this thing years ago, which we kept preaching. Said the same thing about Philadelphia, the Ben Simmons stuff. They should have moved off that thing 2 years ago when they weren't getting along. Both Philadelphia and the Blazers were clinging to some sort of warped loyalty. We can make it work. You're always better in sports. Be aggressive. The team's winning in sports. When the feeling is bad, move off it. You know, I've read things about you should really trust your intuition. Like if you walk into a room and you just feel you're in danger, trust your gut. You walk into a room and people are talking. You walk into it and they stop talking. They probably were talking about you. Like, trust your gut. Several years ago, we said this with Portland. Damian and CJ McCollum are the same player. Dame's much better, but it's the same player. Neither is defensively committed. They're both excellent offensive players. One's an A and one's a B plus. But there's wing issues. So Portland's been in this situation for years. They're trying to figure the wing out. They've got the great backcourt that scores and doesn't defend. That's why Golden State works. Clay's a great defender, so Steph doesn't have to be. In Portland's instance, you have two great offensive players. Well, one great, one really good. Nobody plays defense. They have good bigs, often hurt. But they should have moved off this thing years ago. And they were clinging to some weird, got to the Western Conference Finals where they eventually got smoked. And Philadelphia was clinging to this, you know, we're going to make Simmons and Embiid work. It never worked. It was obvious. Simmons needs the lane open. Embiid's the greater talent. I mean, he's like a baby Shaq, right? Like, Embiid's an all-time talent. But he needs the key. He needs to be around the basket for much of his scoring, certainly not all of it. Well, Simmons can't shoot. Simmons needs the lane open so he can score. LeBron's always understood this. LeBron said, Bosh, Chris, get out. Kevin Love, move out. LeBron likes the lane open because when he loses confidence or is not in a groove shooting, LeBron will drive to the basket and score where he's virtually unstoppable. So he doesn't like his bigs to hang around the basket, right? He wants Chris Bosh to go to the corner, Kevin Love to go to the corner. He's always worked well with bigs. By the way, Anthony Davis is more willing to leave the paint. LeBron can drive. So LeBron's always understood what works. Philadelphia was obvious. Ben Simmons can't play with somebody around the basket because he can't shoot. But they were loyal. And now look at Philadelphia and Portland. Break this thing up. I could see it from a mile away. This weird loyalty thing in pro sports. Be loyal to your family, not your point guard. Now Portland's trapped. Philadelphia's trapped. Maybe they'll do a deal with each other. But sooner than later, aggressive over passive, the general rule. Hour three next.
It's Freddie Prinz Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff, are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddie?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
The second season of El Flow is here. Step into the ever-evolving world of reggaeton and get up close with both legendary figures and emerging talents in the industry.
Part of the enormous significance of reggaeton is really the way in which personal narratives connect to larger things going on historically and socially.
Listen to El Flow on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.